Hello. In this audio snippet, we would like to talk about a series of random things, all of them related to the recent death of America that we have been talking about in the last few audio snippets. And so we'll talk about a few miscellaneous things, and I believe there's a thread in all of them. But they will seem to be a little bit random, but they are, in a general sense, all connected to America's recent death. The first thing that we wanted to share was to add to something we had said in the previous recording that we did not mention because we had basically run out of time. And it was related to the Roosevelt Hotel in New York City that has been used to house all the illegal aliens, or a lot, not all of them, but a good number of the illegal aliens that have been coming into the city. And we talk about this article that was saying the Roosevelt Hotel is the new Ellis Island and that sort of thing, and it's a mess apparently, with people sleeping outside and all that. It looks more like a homeless shelter, and the thing is that what we failed to mention about that hotel the last time is that the address of it, or the significance of the address, which is 45th Street and Madison Avenue. And there are a lot of, there's a kind of like a sad significance to that, because we shared about 44th Street and some other things, but yeah, 44 is a number of like the, how can I say it? It's when a nation comes together to cry out for restoration. That's what the number 44 represents, a movement to restore a nation, a movement of national restoration, shall we say. And the number 45 is like a very beautiful number. It represents grace manifested, the greatness from the inside manifested and allowed to shine forth, and the beauty that it, and the potential that is that was inside being allowed to be manifested and to rule over the atmosphere. That's what the number 45 represents. And so the fact that this hotel is on 45th Street and Madison, it's almost like a kind of a reflection of what happened to America, because Madison Avenue points to obviously James Madison, the founding father, who was the person responsible for the writing of most of the Constitution, and to me, as I've shared before, he is the father of the country as it stands right now. Usually George Washington is seen as the father of the country, but to me, it's more Madison. I, even though I criticize the Constitution a great deal, I guess in my mind, I don't blame him so much, because he was at least trying. He was the one writing. But he fell woefully short, obviously, but no one else was really writing anything or thinking things out and putting them in writing. He was the only one kind of doing that. So I do blame him, because, in a sense, because he had a fundamentally flawed understanding of life and the truth, and that's what led to the Constitution that he ended up writing. He was the one who wrote the, if I'm not mistaken, the Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments to the Constitution, aside from the other stuff that he put in there, that he penned. And clearly from the Bill of Rights, the guy had no clue to what the fundamental human rights were. He left out the right to life, or kind of left little chunks of it in the First Amendment, but nothing more. He left out the right to property. The right to privacy is one of the amendments where, you know, that talks about an illegal government searches. So he kind of like dabbled in a few things related to the rights, and he just sprinkled particulars, a few particulars, not that many to begin with. So he missed the, he basically missed the right to privacy. He didn't understand it beyond a simple, you know, need for a warrant for the federal government to search your house. And that was it. And the right to a fair reputation, completely unaware of that right. And the right to a personal domain, I don't know. It may or may not be there. I'm not too sure, but if it is, it's in a very clouded fashion. So he didn't do a great job. And the thing is that Madison, in a sense, is the cornerstone of the house that just fell a few days ago. He was the cornerstone on which America was built, the American nation and the American Republic. The system, I'm referring to the system, not to the dream or the concept of the real America, but the system that was established and was taken as the American system. He is the cornerstone of that. And the problem, as we've shared before, is that America died, not because of the liberals running amok and doing all the destruction, because, you know, they are animals, they're going to do what they're going to do. They're just non-rational subhumans. The problem with America was the conservatives, who were stuck in their ways and stuck in their idolatry, and that's what killed the country more than anything else. Because if the conservatives, especially the Christian conservatives, had understood the need to get out of the matriarchal system, if they had understood that they needed reject their idolatry, then things would have changed. Then the atmosphere would have changed, and the atmosphere would have taken care of all the liberal nonsense. It would have been not automatic, but you know, in the sense of just snapping your fingers in a simplistic way, but it would have just happened in a kind of a, you could say, supernatural way. In an amazingly supernatural way, it would have just happened. It would have been like a fire that would have raged through the country and just destroyed all the rubbish that has been piling up all these centuries. But it never happened because the conservatives didn't want it. And so they were hoping for the 45 of America, in a sense, the flourishing of America. But they were doing it on the foundation of Madison, of the Madison system. The Madison system that officially died in, as we've said a million times, on the 5th of November, 2008, when Barack Hussein Obastard was elected stupidly by the American people. That's when that system died. And instead of realizing, okay, it's gone, let's deal with it, let's recognize there's something wrong with the system, let's change it, let's just burn it to the ground and start anew. And by burning to the ground, I mean, you know, burning it in our hearts, because as long as we've said before, as long as the Constitution is present, it's the law of the land. So what we needed to do is to, as we kind of like do a parallel thing, you know, start building or creating the new Constitution one clause at a time, boom, 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 writing it out, and having it clear that as we are writing out the new Constitution, anything that contradicts the old Constitution, or anything in the old Constitution that contradicts or interferes with the new clauses, new principles of the new Constitution, those automatically get removed or deleted or made irrelevant. So we would have had this transition from the old to the new without having to do an overthrow of the government or anything crazy. We would have done kind of a natural transition into the new constitution. And once we had the new constitution, then we could say officially this whole this old constitution, the whole thing is done and over with. And then we would have had a new system, a new republic, a new American republic, and things would have been different. Then we would have had our 45. But none of that happened because the conservative idiots, especially the idiot conservative Christians, were stuck in their matriarchal understanding of the world. And the few who were a little bit more activists or whatever, had their hopes firmly placed on the Madison cornerstone. And when you try to build a 45 on a Madison cornerstone, you get the Roosevelt Hotel, a place full of illegal aliens who have no concept of the American. It's so ironic because all these illegal aliens, none of them have a concept of the American experience or the American dream or the manifest destiny of America. None of them have any of that. They come here just to make some money. And I can tell you from firsthand witness experience, I have seen and heard how a lot of the illegal aliens have come in the past. Once they make enough money, their whole motivation in life is to go back to the countries they came from and live out their retirement there. Or they constantly travel back to their because a lot of them became citizens through amnesty, multiple amnesty situations. Then they just want to go back to their original country and all the time, and eventually they plan to retire there. So they really had no interest in America per se. They just wanted to make some money. They enjoy it. You know, they are like rapists. They come, rape the country, and then once they're satisfied after all their rapes, then they just leave, and they just come with the contamination of the third world values to America. And then once they have done their contamination and gotten what they wanted, then they leave. And I'm not saying all of them are like that, but it's such a massive number, percentage of them that are like that, that's why it's a scourge. It's like a plague. And so all these people don't have a love for America like the people who arrived in Ellis Island. So that's the ironic thing that they're comparing this to. This hotel to Ellis Island, because the people who arrived in Ellis Island, when they saw the Statue of Liberty, they sighed with a hope and excitement of freedom. They were not coming here to make money. Yes, obviously, they also wanted to have economic prosperity. I mean, that is natural. But they were coming for more than just making a few dollars in order to go back to Germany or go back to France or England or Italy or wherever they came from. They were coming here because they had heard of a place where people could be free. There was an atmosphere of freedom that existed, or a call for freedom. And you say, oh, well, that's because of the Constitution. No, it was despite the Constitution. The Constitution had some core values hidden deep beneath that were valuable. But it was surrounded with so much rubbish that it kind of neutralized it. So we lived on the power of the dream and the quality of the people who were here, not because of the system. We've tried to explain this a million times. So we had a manifest destiny. We could understand this was the land of freedom. We all knew it. It was not that freedom was not protected by the Constitution. It was there despite the flaws in the Constitution, and it survived that environment of freedom because of the people. The quality of the people was good enough to maintain that dream and that destiny alive. So people would come to America in pursuit of that dream of freedom. And they love this country. They would always say, "I love America." I mean, that's the thing that they will always say, you know, come out of their mouths. "I love America." I don't think I've ever heard a Hispanic, especially illegal alien, say, "I love America." I mean, and when I say Hispanic, I mean a person who is Hispanic, like a person who's not like a fourth, a fifth, or sixth generation American. I'm talking about like the people who just became citizens, or people who speak Spanish in their homes. You know, that's what I'm referring to. If you catch my drift on that, I have never heard a Hispanic in that sense of the word, as I'm saying it right now, saying "I love America." In fact, I have heard them denigrate America. Sometimes I've been over here. I can overhear them talking to each other, and kind of. Oh, one time I heard two Hispanics. They were talking, and I could understand what they were saying. I could hear and I could understand some of the things they were saying. And they were basically talking to each other and saying that, you know, we've come here and we're taking over this country. And they were bragging about it. And they were two people that I know are not going to amount to much in life. And I'm sorry for saying it like that. It's just the reality. You can see the spark of life in some people, the spark of greatness. And I'm not talking about something that you can see just based on appearance or clothes or anything like that, because that is not the what marks greatness. There's something, I don't know how to explain it. Some people just have this thing in their faces, or as you hear them talking, you hear greatness in them. These people were not anything like, they were bragging and almost despising the white man. And I think they mentioned the white man a few times. So there was disdain. It was like, "I'm coming here to make some money and we're going to take over this country," as if to say, "We're going to make this country Hispanic." That's basically what he was bragging to the other guy about. And he was saying it openly on the, you know, where within earshot of people like me, and he had no fear whatsoever of it. So we're not talking about people who love America. I don't think any of them love America. I don't think it does. I don't think that phrase comes out of their mouths at any point, internally in their heads or externally through their vocal cords. It's not there. And so it's ironic that all these people, the conservatives, who tried to build the 45 of America on the cornerstone of Madison, now have at the intersection of 45 and Madison, a hotel full of people who don't give a rodent's derriere about the American Constitution, don't give a rodent's derriere about who Madison is, or George Washington, or Thomas Jefferson, or any of these people, and they are running amok and really, literally taking over what used to be the greatest city in America and on Earth. That is the principle. You know, you hold on to something for dear life, and you end up losing it. So and if you let it go, then you preserve it. And the conservative Christians and the conservatives in America held on to their Madison and their George Washingtons and all these little statues they had and altars to the U.S. Constitution. And because of that, now they have lost it all. And now the country's full of all these people who have no interest in those idols, but who have no interest in the truth either, which is, you know, even worse. So that is the sad kind of irony about this this Roosevelt Hotel. And I think the hotel was named after Teddy Roosevelt, the first of the two Roosevelts who have been president. And Teddy Roosevelt became president because, if I'm not mistaken, it was McKinley that got assassinated at the start of his second term. And I could be having all this information incorrectly, so I apologize if I'm misquoting history. But I think McKinley was assassinated at the beginning of his second term, and Teddy Roosevelt was the vice president, and he became president. And then he got elected as president at the end of McKinley's second term. So in a sense, Roosevelt was a two-term president, even though he didn't get elected as president in his first term. But he served out most of that term as president because he was the vice president to the president who got elected but got... I don't know if he was assassinated or he died of natural causes. I really don't know. And I'm beginning to wonder if I'm getting the person incorrect, if it was Taft or McKinley or one of those irrelevant men, useless, irrelevant men. But regardless, Teddy Roosevelt was the president at the start of America's greatest century, you could say the 20th century. Greatest in the sense of the manifestation of its superpower nature in the world and all that. And so it's interesting that this hotel is named after Teddy Roosevelt, the man who basically symbolizes the rise of America as a world superpower. This world superpower is now full of all these illegal aliens who will come here just to rape the nation and do nothing more. And they bring in all these horrible cultural values that are so destructive, the same values that destroyed their home countries. They're just coming here like rats, you know, bringing that plague. And now that's why we are now a third world country. So the greatness of the 20th century that we thought we could build on has come to this. And that's the confusion. The American conservative kept looking at the 20th century and seeing how, oh, we were the greatest. We are the greatest. And we're having some issues because of these liberals. So let's get rid of the liberals and make America great again. You know, this idea that we had already achieved our greatness and we had not. That's what the name Roosevelt represents. This greatness that deluded us, that deceived Americans into thinking that we had done it. It was the validation that the Madison House was the house of God, that God put on earth as the example of perfect government. This is how government should be. And it turned out all to be a falsehood. And to this day, even now, after America has died and been rejected by the truth, these conservatives are still stuck in their mindset. They still believe we have made it, and we are the greatest, and we shall come back. And they are deceived. And the Roosevelt Hotel is a testimony to that. And interestingly, also, Roosevelt is the name of Polio Boy, the other Roosevelt that took over and started the full-blown destruction of the country through the introduction of all the government nonsense that he brought in as he artificially prolonged the Great Depression, especially as he held on brutally to the gold standard that hampered the money supply because it didn't allow the money supply to reflect actual economic growth. When we've had economic growth, it's always been when the money supply has been allowed to grow according to the reality of production. And we've talked about this before. It happened in the 1860s during the Civil War. And when we started to get back to the gold standard, that led to to panics and depression, and that led to the Democrats becoming relevant again politically. And then in the 1930s, same story with the gold standard, and Roosevelt constantly crippling us and telling us it's like, we're gonna get through this. I'm here for you. You know, it's like the nurse. It's like somebody who did have an injury. But the nurse treats the injury enough for the person not to, be in constant pain, but not enough to get out of the hospital. so that the nurse can just keep him in the hospital forever and ever, ever, never, and be its protector. That's what Roosevelt did to the country. He never let the country heal. And when World War II started, that's when he was forced to let the country heal because he needed economic production. And that's when he let go of the gold standard. And the country was finally allowed to produce. As I've said before, it's ironic that a country can come out of depression because of a war. It just doesn't make any sense, you know, because war is destructive. War is expensive. But it's ironic that it took that for the government and Roosevelt to finally let the country produce. It's like saying, oh, you can walk. I was lying to you all this time. I know that you had a little bit of pain as you put a little bit of weight on your foot, but you could have been walking all this time. Just go, run, because we need to build stuff for the war. And that's when America came to life. And then, thankfully, a son of a bitch was burning in hell as we speak. Died at the end of the war, because if he had stayed for the remaining of his fourth term, if he had been healthy enough to complete his fourth term, then what he would have done is put the shackles back on the economic system, because it's like oh hey, I knew you were able to run, but that was just that was just the adrenaline rushing through you because of the war. Now you have to accept reality, get back in bed, and I'm going to take care of you. He would have done that, and that's why the son of a bitch had to die, and the worthless bastard, expired and went to hell. And that's when America finally had a chance to get back, and then we got into the most prosperous decade, you could say, economically. Maybe I would dare say in America's history, the 1950s. And that's when America became like the most powerful economy on earth. The vast majority of manufactured products were from America. You know, it's not like now that it's made in, everything seems to be made in China. For a time, everything seemed to be made in Japan. But before then, in the 1950s, everything was made in America. And if you wanted the good stuff, the well-built stuff, you bought American. And not here, not only here in America, but around the world. And all of that happened after Roosevelt, the second one, passed away. When Polio Boy died, America had its partial rebirth. But we never really changed the underlying issues. We never got to the core issue of what led to the 1929 Depression. Which is Wall Street. We've talked a million times about what is so rotten about the whole system. It's a gambling system. That's all it is. It's a parasite in the economic system, financial system of America, and the world. And it's always led. It's been the point through which evil has entered the country over and over again. That's how Polio Boy got into power and began the socialization of our society, of our government system. And the same thing happened in 2008. It was through through Wall Street and its collapse with a financial housing bubble that Barack Hussein Obastard was allowed into the country. When we had that weird September collapse in 2008, when McCain was on his way to winning, he was going to win by a close margin, but he was going to win that election. But then we had the financial collapse that suddenly happened in September, coincidentally, and that led to people in America who were stupid and who think only in the short term. It made them say, oh, we need to have a change. So we don't care who it is, let's just have a change. And they voted Barack Hussein Obastard in, along with the Democrats in Congress, and that's when everything collapsed. So we never, and to this day, we have never dealt with it. There's no one out there talking about this because no one cares. All these conservatives, no one understands there's a core problem with that system. That's not capitalism. It is an evil system that promotes elitism. And why don't conservatives realize that? Because the system, the statues that they kneel before, that constitutional system that they worship so, and that system is built with an under a very subtle tone of elitism. And that's why they always brag, we are a republic, not a democracy. So that is some sort of source of pride. But in that, there is elitism. This thing that there's an elite group that will lead us to the promised land because we cannot trust in the madness of the individual, the majority, and the individuals flowing freely. We need some, we want freedom, but we need it controlled to a certain extent by these elites who will lead us to where we need to go. And that elitism, and we've talked about it, how it's embedded in federalism, how you can see it manifested in the Senate, how you can see it manifested in concepts like the Speaker of the House. That's an elite leading the uncontrolled masses and channeling their madness or controlling or funneling or filtering out the madness of the mob, of the democratic mob. And so there's an elitism, and that elitism prevents them understanding why the elite system of Wall Street is corrupt. And I'm not talking just about the corrupt, I'm talking about the fundamentally economically, the system is not economic or metaphysically healthy or sane. It is madness, where people speculate with paper. And then it's ironic that people who complain about the quote fiat currency have no problems with what is even worse than that, you know, the stock market system that sells paper. That's all it is, selling paper and the perception of people on the paper. And it has nothing to do with actual wealth generation, or actually it has very little to do with the financing of economic production. It is just a broken system, and we never got to fix it. And now we have the $33 trillion of debt, the consequence of all the seeds that polio boy left on the ground, that have been growing and growing, and that's why we are where we are now. America is dead. So what I meant to be like a 5-minute comment turned into a long a comment about the Roosevelt Hotel and the state of America. And I know it's not a coincidence that Trump is the 45th or is considered the 45th president. As I've said before, the last president was the 43rd president under the current system. George W. Bush, whether you like him or not, he was the last American president. Everything we've had since then is, yes, it's been nominally a president, but in reality, we haven't had a president. The American Republic, built on the Madison cornerstone, died on November the 5th, 2008. So we've had an imposter. We've had a naive king, and now we have a senile and corrupt thief. But we have had no president. But nominally, Trump is called the 45th president. And it's kind of fitting because all the people who believe in the Madison cornerstone have put their hopes on him. He is like the last, the great white hope, as they say. He's the great hope will prove that house that has already collapsed and died is still alive and can be restored, and that we can make America great again. He is that hope, and so he's a false 45 in a sense. And the conservatives still don't understand. That's a false 45, just like the 45th in Madison is a false 45. Putting their hopes in this man is also a false 45. Now we wanted to talk about what's been happening raw logically, easy for me to say. But here in Hoboken, New Jersey, which is right next to New York, as we've shared before, right across the Hudson River from New York City and Manhattan, here and in the entire New York City area, yesterday, there was a massive rainfall. I mean, I remember on the night from Thursday night into Friday morning, I woke up in the middle of the night and it was raining and it was raining and it was raining, and I could see outside. The window, you know, was all blurry from all the water, and I could hear it raining, but it was like a persistent rain. It didn't seem that violent, but it was just raining, and it just kept raining and raining and raining and raining and raining and raining. And then I realized, maybe I would have known this if I had followed the news, which I don't really locally, but it was the remnants of Ophelia. And it's interesting, when I listened to the Fox Weather Channel describing what was going on in the city and so forth, a young lady explained it as the remnants of Ophelia and other meteorological events going on. So it was like a combination of the remnants of this tropical storm Ophelia, or hurricane Ophelia, and then other things. So it's not just Ophelia, just like what happened with Lee, as it was floating around in the Caribbean, somewhere between Africa and America. It was way off, but it was like a pinball effect. It was leading to a lot of things, and we were getting storms here in New Jersey, at least in the state of New Jersey and Massachusetts and so forth, because it was Lee combined with other things happening that was triggering all this meteorological stuff. And it was almost the same thing here, Ophelia, combined with other things, and leading to this just massive rain. And it just rained, and it flooded a lot of subway stations in New York City. It was just like a disaster. Everybody was in an uproar. And at JFK's airport, which I believe is the biggest airport in the city, because there's JFK, there's LaGuardia. Those are the two big ones, and there's the airport in Newark, New Jersey. But in New York, I believe JFK is the largest airport. And that's the airport where I touched ground for the first time in New York City when I was a kid, when we arrived with my family in the New York area. At JFK, they had 1.15. I'm not sure about the decimals, but it was at least 8. Was roughly 8.15 inches of rain on Friday, the day before this recording, September 29th, 2023. And it broke the record, the one-day record that had been held since 2011, the 14th of August, 2011, when it rained 7.8 inches. Yesterday it rained 8.15, broke the all-time record for most rain in one day, as recorded at JFK Airport, the airport where I touched ground for the first time on the 11th of September, 1980, in New York City, when New York City was like the dream. But I knew it was like the dream. There was a dreaminess about it, like the start of something great. That was going to be manifested, which ended up dying. The American dream, as we described, ended on the 11th of September, one of the days of the period of death of America, the state of the colony of New Jersey, which represented dreaming, that dreaming of great things in the midst of smallness, that died on the 11th of September, 2023, And to commemorate that, 18 days later, and 18 is a number in a negative sense of carnage, 18 days later, JFK gets pummeled with 8.15 inches of rain, and and breaking the all-time record. What I found interesting also is that when I turned to the Fox Weather Channel in the morning to listen to it, they just kept mentioning Hoboken, New Jersey, over and over and over again. It was like, and even one of the fellows, as they were talking to each other in the studio, he said, "Oh, we've been mentioning Hoboken all day, and this and that." And I said, "So, like, even he knew that they just kept saying Hoboken, and I feel like it's not a coincidence, because all these recordings are being done from Hoboken." They were, you know, they had people in Brooklyn and Manhattan and all that, you know, reporting and all that. But they had people here in Hoboken, and I even felt like going out to where they were, because they were near the pier where I go every day for my lunch break, and I felt like going there and maybe just casually walking behind the camera person, you know, just to appear on television. But I didn't do that. But the thing is that they kept mentioning Hoboken over and over again. And I know it's not a coincidence. I thankfully, aside from a few inconveniences, was okay. And there was no flooding in the street where I live, because it's a downhill street. So there was flooding, but it was further down. So I'm at the top of a hill, shall we say, and it flows down from the top of the hill. So all the water went down to the neighbors to the west. But thankfully, right here where I am, there was no issue, aside from a few inconveniences, as I said. And thankfully, by the time it was time for my lunch break to go out, as I do every day, the rain had subsided. And I knew that was a blessing, like that bubble of protection. So it had subsided. I was able to sit outside and buy some food, sit down at the pier again and feed some birds, and then come back to continue working. The thing is that this was a day of a lot of rain. And one thing we didn't mention or emphasize too much about Ophelia, as we described years ago when we talked about Hurricane Ophelia in 2005, that year that featured Katrina and Hurricane Rita and this barrage of storms that we had in America, Ophelia represents the useful servant. That's what the name means, represents, that precious servant that is useful and a blessing to everyone around that servant. And that's what the truth seekers represented. And they were discarded, they were rejected. And that's why this Ophelia came and unleashed its vengeance, as if to say, well, if you are not going to accept these humble servants who have come to serve the truth and to serve you and to bring you into your 45, if you're not going to bless them and honor them and help them and enable them, then the disruption is guaranteed. And that's why Ophelia came. And it was not even Ophelia herself, it was the remnants of her. It's like as Ophelia left, this was the parting gift. In the same way as the truth seekers figuratively and sometimes literally leave America, it's like the parting gift is the carnage that comes, and the manifestation that the dream is indeed dead. It's not just talk, it's a reality. It's not a coincidence. We've been saying all these things. It's not a coincidence. These are not idle words spoken in idleness that are irrelevant. There's a reality, and you can see it in the weather. You can see it manifested externally in the things that are going on. And it will continue to get manifested. But the sad thing is those who are disconnected from the truth just don't see it. They don't see the connection between things. To them, it's just random events that are happening. They don't understand why it's happening. because they have been blindfolded. They refuse to understand every time the light was shown to them, and therefore now they're blind. They're completely blind. They could have the sun staring them in the face, and they still would not see it, because of their intentional blindness has made that blindness permanent. You know, it's like those mothers who tell their kids, you know, don't make that face because your face is going to freeze and be like that forever. Well, that's kind of the same thing that happened with conservatives in America. They continued to act like they were blind. They wanted to be blind, and their wish was granted. They became permanently blind, and now they can't even see. And that's why the country is now dead. Just as a side note, it was interesting that they mentioned on the Fox Weather Channel that a sea lion, they mentioned it in passing, so I'm not sure what the details are about this story, but they said very quickly in passing, a sea lion escaped from the Central Park Zoo. I didn't even know there were sea lions in Central Park in New York, but some sea lion said, I'm out of here, and made a run for it. He escaped in the middle of all the flooding and all the rain and all that stuff, but apparently they found him, and he's back in his cage or wherever they keep him, or his holding area. But I don't know, there's some relevance to that. I still don't quite figure out what it is, but a sea lion escaped from the Central Park Zoo. I know it means something. I'm not sure what it is, but the thing is that the other thing is I went out to lunch, fed some sparrows. They saw me and they were happy to see me because they know that I feed them sometimes. And after I fed them, I came back and I turned on the television just to see if there was any other, you know, more news. And immediately as I turned on the television, I had it on the Fox Weather Channel. It came up and it said, screen that said, and they started talking about the delays, the flight delays in New York City. And they said, and the screenshot said, 23% of all New York City flights have been delayed, and 10% have been canceled. And that's a significant number. You know, I didn't realize how many flights come in and out of New York. It's an incredible number every day. But what it impressed me was those two numbers, 23, because as we said before, 23 is the number of the matriarchy. It is the number of when the server and organizer personalities, which are feminine, inherently feminine, take control and dominate the three male personalities, which are judge, visionary, and conqueror. And so the two dominates over the three. So that's what you have. How you get 23, because the two is in the tens position and the three is in the ones position. So 23 can mean a good thing. It's not necessarily a bad number. It can be a good number, but when it becomes the core value or foundation, then it becomes a bad number. And so 23% of flights were delayed. It's as if to say, because of the matriarchy, the transformation of America kept getting delayed over and over again. That transition, because that's what a flight is. You transition from one place to another. And the flights, 23% of flights got delayed, as if to say, our transition into what we were supposed to become kept getting delayed and delayed because the conservatives, especially the conservative Christians, kept holding on to the matriarchal system, to that stupid, worthless matriarchal system. Old system, the old contract, as we've described it before, it's the system of the old contract. And there was a new contract being offered, but they said, no, we want to hold on to the old contract and build on it. And that kept delaying the restoration, the transition into true greatness, when America was going to be great for the first time. But not great because we were aiming for greatness. Greatness was going to be the consequence, not because we were looking for it, which is different. If we exalt the truth will exalt us. That it's as simple as that. If we try to exalt ourselves, we just end up destroying ourselves. So the thing is that 23% of flights delayed and 10% canceled. 10 means represents a sacrifice and represents a transition. As we said, you know, if you're going 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, when you go from 9 to 10, the 9, which is the largest digit in our decimal system, dies and becomes a 0. But as that 0 comes, then a new number in a new dimension comes in the number 1, if you catch what I'm saying. So the number 10 represents a sacrificial death where you die and you are resurrected into a new nature. That's what the 1 represents. And basically the message in that screenshot was saying, you idiots kept delaying the transformation of this country because you held on to the matriarchal system, and because of that, the transition that was there for you has been canceled. And a transition that would have been enabled by all the Ophelia people who were willing to make the sacrifice, who did make the sacrifice, and were willing to continue making the sacrifice to make that transition a reality. You discarded them, and you spat on their sacrifice, and because of that, your transition is canceled, and you are dead as a nation. The thing is, this thing was such a crazy thing. If I didn't see that, watch the news, and had not heard the rain just falling and falling and falling all night, because I was surprised at how it just, I kept saying it doesn't stop, it just keeps going and going and going. If it weren't for that, I would not have noticed, how bad it was. I didn't see any flooding. When I went out to the pier, the grass was soggy. The grass is like in the middle of the pier. There was a little bit of rain and some puddles, but I didn't see anything major. And the river was like a little upset. It looked upset. The river, the Hudson River, just looked upset. And there was wind and stuff. But if I had not watched the news, I would not have known that all of this craziness was going on all around the city and the area. And yes, there was flooding in Hoboken, to the point that they had the mayor of Hoboken on the Fox Weather Channel. It's like, and I live one block away from City Hall. It's like he was talking, and I was like literally less than one block away. So if I had maybe opened the window a little more, I would have been able to hear him doing the interview from inside City Hall. And he kept talking about all the flooding that had been happening. I didn't see it, thankfully. What I wanted to say is that they kept talking on the Fox Weather Channel about how this rain was so comprehensive that it roadways, buses, trains, flights were all affected, all forms of transportation. And they kept emphasizing that all forms of transportation. They were showing images of a station in Brooklyn just getting flooded, and you could see the water kind of squirting out of holes in the wall, in the tiles. And when I saw that, it looked so third worldish. You know, it didn't look like a modern place. These old stations that we have in the New York area, subway stations, and it's like their oldest showed, and it's a manifestation, you know, that we stayed in the old contract, and it looked so third worldish. And then they showed some shots of Brooklyn, a place in Brooklyn, and they were talking about all the rubbish. You could see all the rubbish literally floating in the water, and the water was all murky and dark, if they had not said or shown, you know, what they were filming or recording or showing, I would have thought they were showing a some recording of Haiti or some third world country. It's just disgusting. All the trash, all the rubbish just floating in the water. It looked disgusting. And all of that is like a confirmation, like the truth, showing, putting a mirror to America and say, this is what you look like now. You are a third world country now. And the fact that all these forms of transportation were being hampered is the fact that it's like saying to America, you're going nowhere. You are done. It's over. You're not transitioning into anything, into the greatness that was there in store for you. You're done. It's over. In New York City, which was going to be the hub of that transformation, is done. And it's interesting. The last thing, I guess, that I wanted to mention about this storm that raged through the city and caused so much mayhem. I remember, I don't know why, I don't remember. Obviously, I wasn't here for Sandy, Hurricane or Superstorm Sandy, as they call it here. Everybody, I was in on the other side of the country living at the time, but so I wasn't here for that, and that was pretty nasty. But in all my time in the New York area, I have never seen a day when people have had so much to say about the storm. About a storm, and there have been rainy periods, but this one takes the cake. It just caused so much mayhem, and everybody just, because it was like a wake up call. It was just telling everybody, "You're done," telling the city and the country, "You're done." It was this massive confirmation, and it's interesting that all of this happened on the 29th of September 2023. Why? Because that is exactly the date when the Feast of Sukkot, the Hebrew Feast of Sukkot, starts. I think it lasts for 7 days or something like that. It's the seventh feast. If you in the Bible, there are seven feasts that the Jewish people had to celebrate. You know, they keep adding the Hanukkah stuff. I don't think Hanukkah is a real biblical feast, or from what I understand from the Bible, it's like a made up thing to kind of have something to celebrate instead of Xmas. So the real final feast of the Jewish calendar is the Feast of Sukkot, the Feast of Tabernacles, as they call it. And in the Hebrew faith, it represents, you know, God tabernacling with man. It represents greatness coming and being manifested openly amongst men. So it's interesting that all of this destruction, all of this bad stuff came on the day that is supposed to it's the day that symbolizes greatness, the supernatural greatness manifested openly amongst men. And it's as if to say, that ain't happening for you, America, you are done. For you, New York, and you, America, you're done. So it's interesting that it happened on that day. And it happened, as I said, 18 days after the 11th of September of 2023, which is the day that New Jersey died. That's why they kept mentioning Hoboken in New Jersey. That's part of it. The day the New Jersey colony died, and the New Jersey colony embodied the dreaming, the dreamer personality of America, the ability to dream great things in the midst of smallness. So 18 days later, after the death of the American dream, on the 11th of September, we had this carnage on the Feast of Sukkot, which is a symbol of the greatness, supernatural greatness being manifested amongst men, and it will never happen in America. And so another the third random thing. So we talked about the Roosevelt Hotel. We've talked about this stuff that happened here in the New York area with all the rain, with Ophelia. And the third thing that we wanted to talk about, which seems like a random, unrelated thing, but I just feel the need that we have to talk about this, is I've had the death of Kennedy, JFK. Oh, interesting. Now that I think about it, I had not thought of that until right now. You know, the biggest airport in New York, the one that I landed on when I was a kid, on the 11th of September, 1980, full of dreams in my heart, by the way. That airport is called JFK. It's JFK Airport. And in fact, when we lived in New York, when we arrived and found a place to live in, it was right in front of the Van Wyck Expressway. And the Van Wyck Expressway, I think, is the one that takes you to JFK, if I'm not mistaken. I remember at night, I would just sit there by the window and just hear just the sound, the fierce sound of the highway, of the Van Wyck Expressway, of all the cars going by. And what I'm trying to say is there's a connection with JFK and all of this. I just realized the connection because I've been thinking about the death, the assassination of JFK in these last few days. I just woke up one day and like, oh, I started thinking about JFK. And as you may know, he was assassinated on the 22nd of November, 1963. And it's also interesting that he's been on the news. People have been talking about him recently because there was this news story about a guy who said that a guy who was there who said that one of the he found a bullet right lying next to JFK, you know, in the car where he was killed, and it was like proof that the magic bullet they always talk about didn't happen, that there was a second shot or something like that. But and I do believe there's something to the whole thing, but it's not worth going into because I don't know all the details. But it's interesting that that story surfaced, like the death of JFK, which is has been largely ignored in the American culture. Every year I would remember every time it was the 22nd of November, I would say inside me, oh, this is the anniversary of JFK's death. But it always seemed like I was the only one who remembered it. I would look around or hear people, and no one seemed to think about that. I wasn't even born, you know, I wasn't even, like, aware of anything. I wasn't even on Earth on the 22nd of November, 1963. Yet, it was always, like, in my head, you know, this date. And so this date that had been kind of become ignored by in the American culture suddenly came back in a way through this story about this guy who said there was a bullet and that confirmed a whole bunch of stuff. But this day, this one day, recently, a couple of days ago, I think it was, I woke up and I started thinking 22nd of November, 1963, and it's as if it seemed to connect with 2023 and the death of America in 2023. And as you know, when JFK died, it rocked people at the time. It's like everybody who lived there, you know, knows where they were when they heard that JFK had been assassinated. And it was like this national grieving because JFK represented something, like a dream. He represented greatness, like the promise of a great future. And that's why the country mourned his death so deeply. So then I started thinking, well, 1963, which is in the middle of a period between 58 and 78. And there's a recent posting on the website where these recordings are posted, where we talk about that period, the 1958 to 1978 period, the relevance of it, and how it's interesting that it, right smack in the middle of that period, 1963, that's when JFK was assassinated. It's like something interrupted midway through, that kind of as the feel that event has in the middle of that period. And so it's interesting that, you know, in 2023, America was also killed. So I started doing numbers in my head and trying to figure out, okay, how many days have passed between 22nd of November, 1963, and the 6th of September, 2023, which is when America died. As we said, America died over a period of 13 days. Once it crossed into the 6th of September, it was dead. Then from the 6th to the 8th, it became brain dead. The three male personalities, the colonies represented the three male personalities of America, died off. So you could say that it became brain dead on the 8th of September. Then it continued dying each colony that was present, you know, when the nation was born, and what it represented began to die, one per day. And on the 11th of September, New Jersey died, and as we said already, that represented the death of the American Dreamer personality, which is the last of the, there are seven personalities, five that are that you're endowed with, and two wildcard ones that you can choose to embrace. So that's the Dreamer personality, one of the wildcard personalities, died on the 11th of September. And then Delaware, which represents the prosperity personality, died on the 12th. And by the way, I saw this story that they were talking about a crime that had been committed in Delaware, this like documentary kind of Dateline style documentary here in America. It was a rerun because I don't have cable or any streaming services or anything like that. But the thing is, they were talking about Delaware and the people saying some of the wealthiest people live in Delaware. And Wilmington, Delaware, is a very prosperous place with a lot of affluence and they just kept talking about prosperity, Delaware being a prosperous state, and it seemed to confirm what I had been saying. I felt like I was going out on a limb when saying it about Delaware, but. But yeah, this was like confirmation. Delaware is indeed the colony that represented the prosperity personality in America. But obviously it's been corrupted. But I would always have doubt about that, because every time I passed through Delaware, through Wilmington by train, when we would travel from Baltimore to New York with my father when I was a kid every month, we would pass through the Wilmington station, and it looked so sad and poor. Wilmington looked like a depressing place to live in, but apparently it's very prosperous. But on the outside, I would just feel despair and poverty, the very opposite of prosperity. But I think that's a reflection that, yes, it's a state of prosperity, but because it's corrupted, it's really poor. You know, it thinks it's rich, but it's really poor. It thinks it's well-dressed, but it's naked. And that's what I would see as a kid. So I kept saying, well, am I right about this thing about Delaware? But that was a confirmation. Well, the thing is, then on the 18th of September, that was the final death date. That's when what was in the colony of North Carolina died. I started thinking, well, about the number of days between the 22nd of November and the 6th of September, 22nd of November 1963 and the 6th of September 2023, and the number that came out was, and it shocked me when I saw it, is 21,838 days, and it shocked me, and I'm not going to share the details because that would be too long, but I've always associated 838 with someone who's been told, you're not approved yet, you still have some ways to go. That's what I associate with 838. Like someone who thinks he's all that, but then, you know, it's like a student who takes a test and he's going to get the test back. You know, the teacher is handing out the tests all graded, and he thinks he's about to, you know, get like an A on his test, or, you know, like 95 or 99 out of 100. And then he gets the test and he gets a 68. Like, what? Like, you know, like a disappointing thing. Like, you thought you were doing better, but you actually were not. That's what 838 represents. And don't ask me why. I have a reason for that, but it would be too long to explain. Every time I see it on my watch, 838, that's what I think about. And 38 is a number of stagnation, of wandering, wandering in the wilderness, going nowhere. The generation that goes nowhere. And 8 is a number of regeneration. It's like we have regeneration, but with regeneration right next to us, we keep wandering in the wilderness. And so the thing is that that's what impacted me about the number in and of itself. But then I started doing the factoring, the prime factorization of the number, and turns out that 21,838 is 2 times 61 times 179. And that shocked me even further. I don't know why 179 is I've always associated it with something negative. And I don't know why my whole life I've always associated it with something negative. Not sure what, but like there's something not kosher about the number. And it surprised me that it showed up there. And 61 is a number of how shall we say? It's a number of vindication and revival. The people who have been anointed to bring the great change start proclaiming liberty. You know, liberty to the captives, and this is the year of liberation. Who are announcing that year of liberation, and who are speaking about the vengeance of the truth against everything that's been all the falsehood that has been proclaimed. It's the year of the announcing of a great change. That's what the number 61 represents to me. So this number 61 is multiplied by two, the two female personalities. So it's like with the two female personalities there present, still ruling the land, the time for change has come. But then 17 represents a manifested greatness. That's what 17 represents. When the Ophelias are allowed to be fully manifested, those faithful, humble servants who are speaking the truth are allowed to be manifested, and their truth and their revelation is allowed to glow and flow across the land. That's what 17 represents. 9 is a number of power. So 179 is like 17 and 9 together, but not jelly, because they're not getting multiplied. You see what I'm saying? 17 and 9 are there next to each other, but they're not getting multiplied. So it's like the time for the 17 is coming, and the power to do it is there, but the power is not given to the Ophelias to release the manifestation. So I hope this is making sense. It may sound like gibberish, but I feel there's a relevance there, that it's not a coincidence that 21,838 days passed from the assassination of JFK to the death of America, that number embodies all of this. It's this announcement of a great year of jubilee, a year of transformation, a time of regeneration for the country, in the midst of the matriarchal system, with our greatness, the 17 greatness, the potential for that being right there, along with the power, the resources to make it all happen. But the resources are not given to the Ophelias to make the greatness be manifest, if I'm making any sense. It's like we have it all there, the food is on the table, it's just a matter of eating it. It's like having a lottery ticket. You've won the jackpot, and all you have to do is go claim it. And it's there, but it's not used. America had a great lottery ticket. The truth seekers, the people who were going to transform this nation, were there with the message, with everything that needed to be, to be known and used to turn this into a nation like no one had ever seen in history. America had that lottery ticket, and it just never went to claim it because it thought it was rubbish. Like, I don't need this thing. What's this, a piece of paper? This is fiat currency. I'm going to go to the gold standard, to my priests and my ministers and my constitution and my My founding fathers, that's my goal. I'm going to stick with the gold standard. I don't want this fiat piece of paper. And that fiat piece of paper was the key to everything. But, you know, it's over. So, the ticket has been torn up, in a sense. At least, it's no longer valid for them. They had to cash it in before the 6th of September. If they had cashed it on the very last minute of the 5th of September, it would still have been valid. But because conservatives didn't, then the ticket, the lottery ticket, expired, and America is on its way to oblivion. So the thing is that on the 11th of September, if you add 5 to 5 days, then you have 21,843 days from the death of Kennedy. And when I saw the factors, the prime factors, turns out that that number is equal to 27 times 809. And 27 is always like a sad number to me, because as you know, there 27 is associated with the death of people who die prematurely. There was a time when you would hear over and over again about all these people who were these great musicians who would die at the age of 27. I think I could be wrong on this, but I think that Jimi Hendrix died at the age of 27. If I could be wrong on this, but that's what I recall. Janis Joplin, if I remember correctly, died at the age of 27 as well. And a lot of people, Amy Winehouse, another more recent singer, died, I believe, at the age of 27. It's like a curse. I think Kurt Cobain, I could be making this up, but I think Kurt Cobain died at the age of 27 as well, the singer of Nirvana. So it's 27 represents like people who are on the cusp of greatness, but die prematurely before achieving it. And 28, the number that follows 27, is known in mathematics as a perfect number. I mean, if you ask a mathematician or someone who has studied maths at university, or maybe even in high school, they will tell you 28 is a perfect number. I think 28, the definition of a perfect number is a number that is equal to the sum of its proper divisors, or something like that. And you can look it up for the details on that. But 28 is a number of perfection. I think there are only three known numbers that fulfill that quality. It's 6, 28, and 496. And I think they've never found the fourth number, but I could be making this up as well. But what I'm trying to say is 28 is a number of perfection. So it's 27 is dying one short of it. Just as we said with that song that we shared the other day, Show Up by Katie Shaw, where she says, are you going to run the marathon and not cross the finish line? And that's what America did. It ran the marathon. It was 25.9 miles. It just had a few more yards to go. Just a few more yards. It said, no, I refuse to. This is as far as I'm going. Can you please just finish? Just do it. Just go ahead. And they had the strength to do it. It was not out of fatigue. It's just they just didn't want to. No, I'm done here. You know why I'm done here? Because I see a constitution pamphlet, a constitutional pamphlet here on the ground. So I'm going to just sit here and read it and rejoice in it. No, but the promise is there. The finish lines are there. No, we're not interested. So America died at 27 before making it to 28. And the number 809, so as we said, 21,843 days from 22nd of November to 11th of September, 2023. And that number is equal to 27 times 809. 809 is also a bad number. 8 is regeneration. 9 is power or resources. So you have the regeneration and you have the resources, but they're separated by a zero in between. It's like America saying, oh yeah, we have the resources. We have the ability to regenerate, but we're not going to allocate our resources to regeneration. We're not interested. We want to just relive the past, make America great again, go back to our founding fathers, go back to the Constitution of 1789 or 88. That's all we want. We want to go back to the past. We have the resources. You know, it's like, you know, that a $6 million man intro, the TV show, the American television show back in the 70s. Steve Austin, astronaut, you know, they say about him crashing, and then the guy says, we can rebuild him. We have the technology. So we had the ability to rebuild America, to rebuild our Steve Austin, and manifest the greatness that we were destined to achieve. But we chose not to as a nation. No, we're not going to allocate the resources to the regeneration process, because we don't need a regeneration, because regeneration means admitting that what we have right now ain't perfect. But it is perfect. It's the 28. And then it's as if, you know, because they thought that was the finish line. The finish line was still a few yards away. So they never crossed the finish line. So they thought they were at 28. It was actually 27. So they never allocated the resources to regeneration, and that's why the country died. And that's why the American dream died, on the 11th of September. And then on the 18th of September, when the death process was finalized, that was 7 days later, which makes it 21,850 days from the death of JFK. And that number, as you can see, 21,850, obviously is a multiple of 50. So it's 50. But then the other two numbers, or other two factors, are kind of like creepy, because the other two factors are 19 times 23. So 50 is a number of abundance, a number of revival, of regeneration, of rain coming down, not to punish us and flood our subways, but rain coming in abundance of prosperity and freedom and life. It's life raining down on a place. That's what the 50 represents, an outpouring of life. That's what 50 represents, but unfortunately, it was combined with 19, and we've talked about, you know, what 19 represents is a bad number. That's why it's not a coincidence that COVID-19, you know, 19 is associated to this plague, so-called plague that was used as a means to do all the destruction that's being done right now. And then 23 is the number of the matriarchy. So is this revival being combined, this potential for this great outpouring, this great revival being combined with the 19, the evil 19, and the matriarchal system? So that's why the country died. So that revival was trying to be built on top of a 19 system and a 23 system of matriarchy. And 19 is a number of evil opportunism. We have briefly mentioned, I think, in some of the recording, some of the articles on the website where these recordings are posted. I think we briefly talked about the 19 pillars that the evil man builds his house on. There are 19 pillars, and there are pillars where men who want to become evil kings over others. These are the pillars on which they build their house. And that's why the COVID-19 thing happened. It was the evil men who wanted to build this palace to rule over us. That's why that number is associated with it, because they used it to means to control us, to using superstition and false science to impose all these things on us, and the people just naively followed. And to this day, they're still stupidly believing that everything they were told was true, when common sense clearly shows it wasn't. When you do the research and you look at the real information, it's obvious it was all superstition. It's like, oh, don't walk under the ladder. Well, actually, don't walk under ladders. I don't know why, but maybe because I don't know. I don't walk under ladders. Maybe because it just feels like I'm exposed to something falling on me. I don't know. But aside from the practical issues, it was believing in all these superstitions. no, you have to do this because if not, the boogeyman is going to come and get you. And the boogeyman did come and get us because we followed their advice. All the people who died in hospital from ventilators, from being given remdesivir and all that stuff, all these deadly treatments that were given instead of the actual common sense, simple treatments that they needed. But regardless, the thing is that's what 19 represents and 23 represents, the matriarchy. So it's not a coincidence that from the death of Kennedy to the finalization of the death of America, there were 21,850 days, which is 50 times 19 times 23. Now, the third thing that I wanted to talk about, now, there are four things, and I'm running out of time, but I'll try to say this very quickly, and I was meaning to say this from earlier, as I was seeing that America was dying, as we were reaching the 6th of September, 2023, I remember one day I was thinking about that and kind of grieving in my heart as the day was approaching, and I had the television on and a commercial came on that I had watched seen a whole bunch of times because it comes on quite frequently, and it's a commercial or an advert for asking for donations for the St. Jude Hospital. So if you're not in America, you might not know about this hospital, but it's a hospital well known, in America. It was built by Danny Thomas, the actor, and he built this hospital because he wanted to help people, with difficult diseases like cancer and so forth. And it's a hospital that I believe is run mostly, if not totally, on donations, and a lot of people donate to it, and so forth. And so it was this advert for that hospital, St. Jude Hospital, and they were talking about this little girl, because it's St. Jude's Hospital for Children. I think it's focused on children. So. If I remember correctly. So the thing is that they were talking about this little girl. And as I was grieving about America, I looked up at commercial I'd seen a million times. And then suddenly I look up and see the name of her name kind of showing on the screen in not too big a font. But it caught my eye, and I said, "Oh!" And they did not. They not only show the name on screen; they also say it. But I realized, oh, her name was Amris, AMRIS, and I think the reason why it just kept escaping my consciousness is that it's not a name that I've ever heard before. So that's why it didn't resonate or catch my attention. It's like Amris, and they say it so quickly. When you're just listening to the audio, it's just Amris, and you don't realize, the name. When I saw it written out, Amris, then I said, "Oh, doesn't that look like America?" I've never, ever heard that name ever in my life, Amris, until that commercial. And I know it's significant. And I said, "Okay," because I was wondering, is America going to die? What's going to happen? And I look up and I see this name, Amris. Amris, which I said, "Oh, that looks a lot like America." America, Amris. So I said, "Okay, so I started paying attention, to really pay attention to the commercial that I'd seen so many times before. And the commercial is about this little girl, this beautiful little girl. I think she was 3 years old or something. And they show the two parents talking about her. And you can see the love in their faces, the really loving parents. And the father is talking about his beautiful little girl. And he was saying, "Well, I started noticing that she had a bit of a head tilt. Not too much of a head tilt, but enough to make me think." And then he says that he said to his wife, "Honey, I think there's something wrong here. I don't know what, but I think there's something wrong here." And turns out that, I don't know how it happened, but she got checked, and turns out they had, she had a tumor growing on one side of her brain, and I think that's what was leading to the head tilt. And so they were able to get her into St. Jude's Hospital. This was in July 2012, and they treated her. And it was difficult and everything. And then miraculously she recovered from it and she was fully healed. And they were, you know, rejoicing over that. They went back home and she, you know, continued growing. So she started growing and she got pretty tall. You know, beautiful little girl. And then in 2020, then they show, because they first show the parents talking in 2012, and then you see them again around 2020. You see them, they're a little bit older, and the father starts talking about, you know, that the cancer had returned out of nowhere, thinking they had beaten it, and they took her back to St. Jude's, and they show images of her coming into, you know, to the place and meeting the doctors and all that. And then interesting, it says 2020, but St. Jude's takes, they felt it very important to mention that they put it in captions at the bottom, this was pre-pandemic. And I think the reason why they did that is because none of the people in the scenes that were being recorded had the stupid head mask, the face mask on. So I think that when they said 2020 and showing people without masks, their concern was, oh, they're going to think that we don't follow the protocols set by the CDC and Tony Fauci. And so it was pre-pandemic, and that's how they described it. And so, or pandemic, as I call it, and I explain why I call it pandemic. We were all being turned into pandas. But the thing is that she got sick right before the nonsense happened, and then in future shots they do show her with the mask, face mask on and all that. But I understand, you know, in the case of cancer, it is not uncommon for them to wear masks. So, but the thing is that they keep talking about her, and then towards the end, out of nowhere, the announcer says, but Amriz did not make it. And they just show a picture of her, this beautiful little girl. It's kind of sad to see that. And they talk about her passing away. And then they talk about, you know, but St. Jude's keeps fighting and all that for, cancer to be healed in kids. But it's really heartbreaking to see that she had passed away. And I thought to myself, it's kind of strange how, you know, she was able to overcome it a few years earlier, back in 2012, and she didn't make it this time. Now, I'm not going to, I'm just going to theorize here, and that's not the core of what I mean to say, but I, or maybe it is, but the thing is, I personally suspect, because I started hearing about St. Jude's being kind of very, pardon my French, very anal about the protocol stuff. And that's when I started losing respect for them. And I would not be surprised if this poor little girl was forced to take the injection, or if they started, you know, doing things to her, to protect her from the evil virus. And I wouldn't be surprised if that was a big factor in her not making it the second time. I would not be surprised about that at all. But the thing is that when I heard that she, you know, and I had seen this commercial, it had touched me before, but when I watched it that time, it's America dying. Yes, America was on the verge of death, because we were on the verge of death back in 2008, 2009. People don't realize it. Or as far back as 2006, I knew that things were very bad, very bad. And I personally went through 2 years of hell, of horror and hell. And from 2006 to 2008, 2.5 years of hell. And then I continued my hell experience into 2011. And after 2011, I knew there was like a bit of life at the end of the tunnel. Like I was seeing the hope. And interesting, she got sick around 2012 and recovered from that. And then was able to have a little bit of life of her childhood. And then she got sick in 2020, as just before the whole virus nonsense started, as the country was about to go on its final phase of dying. But she didn't make it the second time. We were given an opportunity, and we say this over and over again in the articles on the website where these recordings are posted, that America was, we were given an opportunity from 1998 on into 2018, that 20-year period, but we killed it off in, I think, the 4th of April 2009 or 2010, if I'm not mistaken. That's when we kind of killed it off, and we went into this state of limbo. And in 2018, it's like we were given a second chance, and we just squandered it. I mean, everything, it's like we were given the same tests over and over again. From 1998 onwards, we were given some tests. We passed some, we failed others, but then we eventually, you know, didn't pass the course. We were canceled in the 4th of April 2010. We were given a chance to take the course again. And we were given the same test. We described these tests in an article that was posted not too long ago. And on the website where these recordings are posted. And every test, we did worse than we did 20 years ago. So we were given a second chance, but we didn't make it. And to me, that was like what was represented in this little girl, who represented America and the greatness and the potential of America, how she died the second time. And I'm sure that I know that the protocols, quote, that were implemented because of the pandemic at St. Jude's Hospital contributed to her not surviving the second time, second cancer. And she, her name being Ambrose, why did they give her that name? And there's a lot of things, you know, you wonder why this all happened, but when you start unmasking some of the things that are happening underneath, it starts making more sense. Like her death represented something, and it's almost like a sacrifice. And in a sense, it maybe it's a sacrifice to preserve and restore and protect the Ophelias that have been battling, and who need protection now as the country has died. I don't know. But I felt I needed to talk about that. And interesting, St. Jude's, the name Jude, as you may know if you're a conservative Christian, Bible-thumping, U.S. Constitution-loving Christian, conservative American Christian, you know that the book of Jude is the 65th book of the Bible. It's the second to last book, and the last book, obviously, as everybody knows, is the book of Revelation. The revelation of the truth of you know, that's what the book is about. If you're a Christian, you know, that's what you see there. And it's not a coincidence that it's St. Jude's Hospital, the 65th book, one book, just one book away from the revelation of the truth, one book away, and America died 1 yard short of the finish line, figuratively speaking. On the 65th book, that's where it died. It died at Jude. It never entered into Revelation. And I think that's also not a coincidence. Okay, so the last thing that we wanted to talk about, and we're running out of time, is, and I know this is all relevant, and it's all interconnected in some mysterious way, but I felt the great need to talk about the Great Fire of London of 1666. That number has always puzzled me because it's kind of like a very ominous number of the year, you know, 1666. That was the year of the Great Fire of London that some of you may have heard. But the reason why I wanted to bring it up is that a friend kindly gifted a book to me called What If? And and it talks about like all events that could have happened in history, how things would have changed if certain events had not happened the way they actually happened. So I was just leafing through it, and then suddenly I saw this this one about the Great Fire of London. So the question is, what if? And it's also connected, the what if, to what we talked about. When America died, I heard two songs, literally, not in my mind, but literally on my phone. As America was dying on that 5th of September, the sunset of the 5th of September, two songs, the national anthem, beautifully sung by Anita Bryant, and then What If by Coldplay, as if to say, you know, this was the great America, this is the swan song, this is the last song as we bring down the flag of America, and then the question, what if we had done things differently? This article in this book, shall we say, or magazine or book or whatever you want to call it, says, what if the Great Fire of London hadn't happened in 1666? What caught my attention was when I started reading it here, it says, the Great Fire of London began as an ember on Pudding Lane, and between the 2nd and the 5th of September 1666 grew into an inferno that ravaged the metropolis. So I said, oh, interesting. I had always known it was 1666 because of the 666 thing. I didn't know that the exact dates. It was from the 2nd to the 5th of September. And I said, oh, interesting. Because America died on the 6th of September. The 5th of September was the last day we were alive as a nation. 5th of September, 2023. So I said, oh, interesting. What is this all about? So I kept reading. Some claim that it ended the spread of the plague, and though that is debatable, it certainly changed the face of the city forever. So there was a plague. There was a plague in 1665, ravaging through London. It was called the Great Plague Epidemic of 1665. And I'm reading here from Wikipedia, it says, I forget which article, it may have been the article on the fire, the Great Fire of London. I copied it from somewhere, but it says the Great Plague Epidemic of 1665 is believed to have killed one-sixth of London's inhabitants, or 80,000 people, and it sometimes suggested that the fire, the London fire, saved lives in the long run by burning down so many unsanitary housing. So much unsanitary housing with their rats and their fleas, which transmitted the plague, as plague epidemics did not recur in London after the fire. And some people question it, but I'm not going to get into the debate of whether it did or didn't. I believe it had an influence on it. The thing is that, but it represented more than ending a plague. And I find this interesting because we were in the middle of a so-called plague, you know, the virus, the stuff. And it was like our last opportunity to burn down the whole house, this wooden house that we had relied on for all this time, to build a more permanent and more perfect country. And American conservatives chose not to. But it's interesting that, you know, there was a plague right before the fire, and we, right before our death, you know, we had a so-called plague, more of a manufactured plague, but, you know, psychological plague nonetheless, of rats, in this case, you know, transported by rats, which in this case were Democrats, spreading their fleas of a fear-mongering and superstitious false science, and so forth. So we had a plague, even though it was not a literal plague, it was a manufactured plague, made worse by the solutions that were implemented. All the people that died because we didn't treat the disease properly. But there was a plague, even though the plague was more not more figurative than literal, but there was a plague as well. And so that was interesting. And then it says here, working late in his bakery, Thomas, and I have trouble pronouncing this, but it's spelled F-A-R-R-I-N-E-R. So every time I pronounce it, it sounds like foreigner. So it sounds like foreigner, like someone who is from a foreign country, but it's actually foreigner. But I'll say Thomas Foreigner spotted a smoldering ember among the extinguished coals of his bakehouse. He stamped it out and, thinking no more of this unremarkable occurrence, went up to bed. In other words, he saw this ember and he stamped it up. And he thought, okay, I'm done. I'm going to bed. Same like conservatives, you know. They always think, you know, this is just one little thing. We just have to deal with this, stamp it out. But everything else is perfect. There's nothing underneath the surface to worry about. So they just go to bed and go to sleep. Same exact thing that happened to the conservatives in America. And turns out that there was another ember burning. And he, you know, Thomas didn't see it. And that started the fire. And it just spread. And it raged from the 2nd to the 5th of September. But the thing is that Thomas, you know, seems like a fitting name. You know, the guy who built St. Jude's Hospital is called Danny Thomas. That was his name. And Thomas always makes me think of, as you may imagine, of the doubting Thomases, you know, the people who don't believe it until they see it. And that was America's attitude. Conservative Christians were being told the truth, or being told things that needed to be done. The conservatives in general were being told the truth that needed to be done, and they said, no, who is this talking to us? Who is this saying these strange things and defiling our great nation, defiling our founding fathers? Who are these people? We don't know who they are. Do you have something backing you up? Do you have like this big ministry or this big organization, political organization supporting you to back up the reality of your statements? And no, it's like, no. Sorry, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. America looks great. I can touch the prosperity. I can touch the wealth. I can touch the modernity. I can touch the technology. Hence, we are fine. So America acted like a doubting Thomas. The truth that was being given to her that would have galvanized America and transformed it was just dismissed and ignored. And that doubting Thomas attitude contributed to our death. And in the same way, there's a Thomas here, a Thomas Foreigner, which is interesting. He was not a foreigner, but he was a foreigner. And the ironic thing is that America was, especially conservatives, were afraid of anything foreign to the American tradition, to the American way of understanding things. Same thing with the Christians. Anything that seemed foreign to their understanding of Christianity, their matriarchal understanding of Christianity, was rejected as foreign and strange. And when in reality, they were the foreigners. They were the foreigners to the truth. The truth didn't recognize them. But they thought they were right at home with the truth, that they were the nationals. You know, if truth was a country, they thought they were the natives. And they were actually the foreigners. Just like this Thomas was a foreigner. And it's interesting that when this fire broke out, let me just read this quickly if I can find it. If I can find it, let me see if I can go to the article on this. But I wanted to mention, let me just read parts of it here on the Wikipedia article on the Great Fire of London. A committee was established to investigate the cause of the Great Fire, chaired by Sir Robert Brooke. It received many submissions alleging a conspiracy of foreigners in Catholics to Destroy London. The committee's report was presented to Parliament on the 22nd of January. Versions of the report that appeared in print concluded that Hubert was one of a number of Catholic plotters responsible for starting the fire. And I wish I could find more articles on this, but more comments on this. It says here, the fire pushed north on Monday into the heart of the city. Order in the streets broke down as rumors arose of suspicious foreigners setting fires. The fears of the homeless focused on the French and Dutch, England's enemies in the ongoing Second Anglo-Dutch War. There was an Anglo-Dutch War going on between, you know, obviously the English and Holland. And that created this suspicion that, some foreigners must have done this. And then it says here, these substantial immigration groups became victims of street violence. So what I'm trying to say is that the fire promoted this idea that there's a foreigner in our midst trying to destroy us, just like in America. There was this idea that foreign ideas were coming to destroy the country. And yes, there were some foreign ideas coming in to destroy the country, like the ones introduced by Barack Hussein Obastrid. But in excluding that foreign idea, they also wanted to exclude all foreign ideas because America is the greatest, the American tradition, the American system is the greatest, so let's not let anything from the outside. So when, yes, true invaders would come, they would say, no, that's not good. But then they rejected the ones who came to bring life to the nation. And I'm talking in terms of ideas, foreign ideas that were foreign to our American tradition. But ironically, these were the ideas that were going to cement everything that we love about America and its freedom and its individuality and its capitalism and everything else. But they didn't see it that way. So they were doubting Thomas's when the foreigners came, without realizing they were the foreigners, not the ones that they were deeming foreigners. Those were the real Americans, the ones that they rejected. So if I go back here to what I had copy-pasted, it says here, the Great Fire of London, from the Wikipedia article, was a major conflagration that swept through central London from Sunday the 2nd of September to Thursday the 6th of September 1666. They say the 6th of September, but it was really the 5th. It was like the 6th was like the aftermath, shall we say. Gutting the medieval city of London inside the old Roman city wall, while also extending past the wall to the west. The death toll is generally thought to have been relatively small, although some historians have challenged this belief. But it's interesting that they mentioned inside the old Roman city wall. And I'm going to say this quickly, and maybe we'll talk about this some other time. But I've been thinking a lot about the fall of Rome. And it's interesting, I don't know, there's this TikTok trend or whatever crazy nonsense, social media nonsense that they do nowadays. And it's like some people have been talking about that a lot of people have been thinking about the fall of Rome, and I don't know where in the world that came from. It was something that took me by surprise. I only found out because someone at work shared this in some, you know, random, channel that, where, workers, in the company I work for are allowed to kind of post like random news events and things like that. So someone posted this thing about, people asking their husbands about, have you been thinking about the fall of Rome? I don't know why, but I know it's not a coincidence because just like Rome fell, America has fallen. But Rome's fall, and Rome was the Roman Republic, you know, that lasted 500 years. We only lasted 247, which is so sad, from 1776 to 2023. We didn't even make it to 300 years. Rome at least lasted 500. And I think there's hope, you could say, for Rome and Italy that is not present in America. But it's interesting, but our fall was similar in many ways. This great empire that seemed unbeatable has been toppled. The American empire is gone. It's fallen. So I know it's not a coincidence that this is talking about Rome, and that people have been talking for some strange reason about the fall of Rome, and I know it's not a coincidence. because they've been talking about this as America has fallen, just like the Roman Empire fell, or the Roman Republic fell 500 years ago. Then it became an empire, and then it lasted for a whole bunch of years, a whole bunch of centuries, and then it eventually died off as well. What I wanted to share here is that this Thomas Farrenor provided bread for the Royal Navy during the Anglo-Dutch War. And then it says here, the fire started in a big... we've read this. The use of the major firefighting technique of the time, the creation of fire breaks by means of removing structures in the fire's path, was critically delayed due to the indecisiveness of the Lord Mayor Sir Thomas Bludworth. Again, Thomas, the doubting Thomas. He was indecisive. By the time large-scale demolitions were ordered on Sunday night, the wind had already fanned the bakery fire into a firestorm which defeated such measures. The fire pushed north on Monday into the heart of the city. Order in the streets broke down and rumors arose of suspicious foreigners setting fire. So we've talked about this. If I can find it, it says, the thing is that this Thomas Farrenor, who had supplied bread to the Royal Navy during the Anglo-Dutch War, you know, that's where the fire started, and the fire people wanted to demolish the houses, you know, around the bakery to stop the fire. So it says here in the article, Wikipedia article, the more experienced firemen were clamoring for demolition, but Bludworth refused on the grounds that most premises were rented and the owners could not be found. Bludworth is generally thought to have been appointed to the office of Lord Mayor as a yes man rather than by possessing requisite capabilities for the job. He panicked when faced with a sudden emergency and when pressed made the oft-quoted remark, quote, a woman could piss it out, unquote, and left. Jacob Field notes that although Bludworth is, quote, is frequently held culpable by contemporaries as well as some later historians for not stopping the fire in its early stages, there was little he could have done, unquote, given the state of firefighting expertise and the social-political implications of anti-fire action at the time. So they're trying to kind of protect his reputation. But obviously, he had to make a decision. You have to bring this house down, demolish these houses to save the city. And he said, no, we have to find the owners. These houses are rented. We have to get the confirmations. He was worried about, you know, being losing political leverage, you know, becoming unpopular by demolishing houses. And I understand, you know, if your house is about to be demolished, but I mean, it burnt down anyway. You have to look at it that way. I mean, it's my house, you know, I pay for it, but you know, if they don't demolish it, the fire's going to spread and not only burn down my house, but burn down everybody else's house. So, you know, sorry, but it grieves my heart. But if you have to demolish my house, go ahead and do it, you know. And this guy didn't want to do it because he didn't want the, you know, as this rationalizer said, the social-political implications of anti-fire action. In other words, he was concerned about his political image if he started destroying houses just to stop a fire that started in some silly bakery. If I find that very interesting, another Thomas involved, someone who didn't want to destroy the system. Like, we have to tear down the Constitution, sir. We have to destroy this system. We have to destroy this bicameral system. We have to end federalism. We have to end all these things to save the city. And the Thomases of America said, no, hell no. No, you're not destroying those things. Those are precious to us. So we're going to keep them. So let's try to fight the fire. A woman can piss it out. Turns out the matriarchal woman could not piss out the fire. Sorry. The matriarchal woman that the conservative Christian system, you know, with their stupid, effeminate little pastors, that system that those stupid Christians relied on, was not enough to stop the fire, and that's why the country has died powerless. I have my level of disdain is indescribable for the effeminate, worthless little pastor rubbish that fills the American conservative Christian church system. Just girly men. That's what they are. Worthless, girly men. Arrogant, effeminate, and self-righteous, and with no authority, no real authority to change anything. That's why the world just collapsed around them. They couldn't stop a single thing. A liberal onslaught just coming on, and they couldn't stop a single thing because they were a bunch of effeminate wusses and whores. And that's why, you know, they thought they could piss out the fire. Turns out they didn't. It says here in the Wikipedia article, the city was essentially medieval in its street plan, an overcrowded warren of narrow, winding, cobbled alleys. It had experienced several major fires before 1666, the most recent in 1633, 33 years earlier. Building with wood and roofing with thatch had been prohibited for centuries, but these cheap materials continued to be used. So, it's like interesting in America, you know, wood is like the predominant material for building houses. And it's kind of symbolic of how we continue continued building on temporary structures that had to be removed at some point. And that's what the fire basically did. It came in London and it kind of forced the rebuilding of things that had to be torn down. One thing that also that's important, aside from the context of the plague that was had been ravaging through London like the year before, there was also another context to take into account. Charles II was the king of Britain, of you know, of England and of the United Kingdom of Britain. At the time of the fire in 1666, Charles II. And as you may recall, Charles II was the guy who became king back in 1660 after the interregnum period, the period when Oliver Cromwell and the others had this republican, more or less republican, if you could call it that, system, non-monarchical system. There was a time from, I think, 1649 to 1660, during which there was no king in England. Charles I had been killed. Charles II, his eldest surviving child, fled. And he was exiled, and he was not the king. So... England and the UK experienced this period of freedom from monarchical rule, and then eventually it collapsed, and Charles II was able to return and reinstituted the king system. And it's interesting that, as we've said before, that Chuck the Turd chose to relive, bring back to life the name Charles. But now, as we've said before, Chuck the Turd is no longer the King of England. He is, he's Chuck the Turd. That's what he is. He's not the king. He's just the Turd of, Chuck the Turd of England. The monarchical system is dead too. There's also a show of royalty and all that, but it died with Elizabeth II. That was the last monarch, and the monarchical system in England and the UK is gone. It's over. But the thing is that this happened in the middle of this guy, this worthless king, who came and reinstituted the monarchical system. And he was not a good king at all. So that's another thing to consider. What I get from all of this regarding the fire is that the fire lasted until the 5th of September. It's as if England was, you know, went through this fire burning with Chuck II, in power and the plague and all that, but it was able to finish out the burning by the 5th. like one day short of its death, if you catch my drift. One day short of dying. And I hope that's a sign for England that, yes, America didn't make it, you know, because it didn't let the destruction stop before it died on the 6th. But I take this as a hope, sign of hope, that England did stop right short. Like, you know, it's like, you know, it's like that, like somebody leaving gunpowder, like a trail of gunpowder and lighting the gunpowder, and then the fire or whatever, you know, starts burning the gunpowder. At the end of the gunpowder, there's this big, massive barrel of gunpowder that's going to explode, and it's as if somebody stomped out the fire in the gunpowder just before it reached the barrel, and before the big explosion. That's kind of how I see this great fire being represented, and all it's like it's America. It looks like America in so many ways, but it was able to stop before the 6th of September. So I see that as a sign of hope. Now, there were two other quick things that I wanted to mention, but I think we have run out of time. And they had to do with Trump and something in his body movement, his body language, that is very relevant to Ambrose and what we talked about, Ambrose. But I think we will talk about it the next time. But that's what we wanted to get to. And also we wanted to talk a little bit about the guy who got scapegoated for the fire of London, Robert Hubert, or Robert Hubert, because he was French. It's kind of a sad story. We'll talk about those things, hopefully, in a future audio snippet. Thank you very much for listening.